You are listening to rudolfsteineraudio.com. This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Man's Life on Earth and in the Spiritual Worlds. This is the last lecture in this collection, Lecture 6. These were given in England in 1922, and this Lecture 6 was given in London on the 19th of November. I want today to bring it to a kind of conclusion the subjects we have lately been considering here. You know already what the lot of man is immediately after death. He has laid aside his physical body, and he is in a position in which he cannot be during earth life through his ordinary consciousness. He has his ego, his astral body, and his etheric body around and attached to him. This etheric body is united with the physical body throughout the whole of the period between birth and death. And during sleep, it is only the ego and astral body of man that are outside the etheric and the physical bodies. When, after death, man is, for a short time, a period of days only, still attached to his etheric body, or body of picture forces, he is, because of this, in a position to look back upon the whole course of his earth life. The course of his earth life is preserved within the etheric body. I also said in the public lectures that when, through initiation, man succeeds in freeing his etheric body, he is able to survey the course of his earth life. But man cannot remain attached to his etheric body for long after death, for the etheric body is, in essence, connected with the whole cosmos. Its tendency is to expand into the cosmos. If we were to lose our physical body for a moment during life, the etheric body would at once acquire the tendency, as the result of an elastic force, to dissolve itself into the cosmos. It is held together in life only through the physical body, in which it is perpetually immersed. When the coalescing force of the physical body is no longer there, the etheric body begins to expand, and after a few days has expanded to such an extent that it is no longer there so far as the man is concerned. You know that if you have a drop of water, it is there. If you heat it, it expands in every direction, and finally it is no longer there. You cannot see it anymore. In this way, the etheric body expands after death, and after a few days, it is no longer there. Initiation wisdom points out that this process lasts for only a few days. Through initiation wisdom, man comes to the point where he can make use of his etheric body during his earth life. In that case, it remains within the physical body, but man makes use of it in that he takes no conscious thought for the physical body. He has, furthermore, the retrospective survey of his earth life. As well as this, a reflection of the whole universe shines into the etheric body of man. The whole starry heavens are in the etheric body. The etheric body, separated from the physical body, reveals to us the whole world of stars, the planets, and the fixed stars. Finally, the planets and the fixed stars absorb the etheric body. And so it is that initiation science and wisdom can, at the most, for 3 or 4 days, hold the pictures which it has in this way in the etheric body. They then disappear. And if one wants to maintain a connection with them, one has to return again to the physical body before their disappearance, in order that the etheric body may be held together. The etheric body disappears from man a few days after death. But through this, man becomes, to an ever greater extent, an inhabitant in the world of the stars. When, first, the etheric body has been laid aside, man feels himself a stranger within the world of the stars. That which, out of the world of the stars, appears as something already known, are really only the moon forces. The moon appears so that a man has it as a reflection of its physical form. but at the same time man learns to know the spiritual forces that are connected with the moon. He learns to know that the cosmic Jehovah force is connected with the moon, as I described it last time. The moon is transformed for those who have gone through the gate of death, transformed into a colony of spiritual beings whose leader is Jehovah. After death, man acquires knowledge of that of which initiation science is able to speak, because it has pictures of these things during earth life itself. Man learns to know the significance and meaning of death on the earth, and he knows it as a result of the moon forces, of the Jehovah forces. Let us consider death on the earth. The physical body of a man becomes lifeless. The spiritual soul and etheric elements that have penetrated the physical body have vanished from it. The physical body is taken over by the forces and elements of the earth, by the forces of earth and water, if it has been buried, or the forces of fire and air, if it has been burned. The physical body of man is thus taken over by the earth forces. It has been laid aside by the human being. What does this really mean? The physical body has been laid aside by the human being and is passed over into a state of decay. The facts are these. When man is born and has within him the growth forces of childhood, and also before birth in the embryonic state, when he is related to the earth in a bodily sense, in the body of the mother, these are the same forces which in death are the forces of destruction, the forces which leave the physical body in death, which make their appearance in death, because the physical body is falling into decay, are the same as those which build up the physical body. Man passes through his etheric and astral experiences and enters a spiritual world. But here, on the earth, something extricates itself from the physical body. A spiritual element goes out of the physical body. We may say, the real man passes out on the one hand, and another being passes out on the other. The physical body of man lies in death. The man forsakes it, but another being leaves it also. This other being is composed of what on earth were the living moon forces. The moon forces are concentrated in the cosmic moon, but their operations stretch far and wide. On the earth they manifest in the forces of death. But these forces of death are equally the forces of birth. They lead man into life and make their reappearance when he passes out of life. In this way we get a conception of the connection between birth and death. And taking all the men who die in the course of time, we may say that the apparition of death passes out of each human being and is united with an atmosphere, with a spiritual atmosphere, which surrounds the earth like the atmosphere of air, and contains that which death yields up, and which birth in turn receives. The forces that to a certain extent rise up from the human corpse are the cause of the rebirth of men. Our forces of birth are spiritually connected with the forces of death. Forces that, as a result of death, make their appearance in the environment of the earth. Now consider the following. These forces of death, which are also the forces of birth, are the moon forces. These moon forces are colored by such moral forces as a man may have acquired between birth and death. If a man has led a good life in a certain connection, there comes into existence in this sphere of the moon death forces a being that contains within itself a force that has remained from his goodness. It is also within it all that has remained of his failings. We build up this being while we live on earth. Ordinary consciousness knows nothing about this being, yet we bear it within us. Every night while we sleep, we leave it behind. When we pass out of our physical body, this being remains within the physical body. I have told you that the moral and religious feelings are left behind in the physical and etheric bodies. An actual being is also left behind, a being whom we build up as the bearer of our karma during our earth life. This being remains in connection with us so long as we are in the sphere of the moon forces. It is this being who keeps us within the sphere of the moon forces, that is, in the proximity of the earth, and so, in the period immediately following death, we remain connected with the moon forces and with our karma in such a way that we have actually to live through all our deeds between birth and death on the earth. We have to live through them spiritually. I said in the public lectures that this was done 3 times more quickly than was the case on the earth. We have to live through them backward, and in this way we spend a period after death, a period wherein we are not connected with the physical body, which we have laid aside, but with the moon forces of death. We have, as spiritual and soul beings, to go through our deeds that have an inner relationship with those we performed on earth. We pass through our life once again backward, and through this we become, for the first time, conscious of our karma. What is spiritual must be looked at in a spiritual sense. If you have loved a certain person on earth, you may feel, ah, yes, after death he has now to live through all his bad deeds and his imperfections. And as a result of your earthly physical life, pity arises in you that the man has to pass through this. But if you were to ask a man who has thus passed through the gate of death whether he himself looks at the thing in this way, he would answer in the negative. He would say, quote, I would not wish to go through this post-mortem life otherwise than with the judgment and discernment that I now have as a spiritual and soul being. For I am experiencing now something all over again, in order that it may become a real part of my true soul essence. For if I began to perform actions which showed me to be an imperfect man, and were not to live through them again in my inner being, I should not receive the urge to make up for them. Neither should I have the will to shake myself free of this imperfection. Because I live through the action again in a spiritual and soul sense, I acquire the impulse to overcome it by more perfect action. Close quote. The dead man would not on any account forego this re-experiencing, for it gives him the power to press forward to his full humanity. We must be quite clear that just as the earth, viewed from a valley, has a different appearance from when it is viewed from a mountain top, so life looked at from the physical world has a different aspect from when it is looked at from the other side. As a rule, men do not judge rightly of the connection of earth life with superphysical life, with life after death. Let us take another case. Suppose you are a good anthroposophist, enthusiastic about anthroposophy, and someone in your household with whom you are closely connected hates anthroposophy as his deadliest enemy. You may perhaps have the very deepest sorrow and imagine that you are giving great pain to this person because you are an anthroposophist and he simply hates anthroposophy. From the standpoint of earth life, that is possibly correct. But very often it appears, when looked at from the other side, that the person's karma prevents him from being able to come to anthroposophy because of hindrances in his nature that he has brought over from a previous life, and which make his head hate anthroposophy. His head cannot get near to anthroposophy. He becomes uneasy, enraged, simply when he hears the very mention of anthroposophy. His heart, however, is not necessarily opposed to anthroposophy. When such a person dies, it may well be that he has an intense longing for anthroposophy after death, so that you are often doing right to direct anthroposophical thoughts to a man after his death who here in life has hated anthroposophy, in order to lead him to it. However strange and paradoxical it may sound, many a member of a family who has simply raged when another member of the family has become an anthroposophist has become, after death, the most devoted adherent. I said to you on my previous visit here that on the other side of death, life is to be judged and looked at quite differently from what is the case here, and that must be taken absolutely seriously in this connection too. We can see through this how man becomes transformed. Here, in physical earth life, your brain is in your skull, the lungs further down. Then there are the other organs, and externally the senses. You perceive the world through all this that is enclosed within your skin. You emerge from that. At first the stars shine into your etheric body. But when you have laid aside your etheric body, you identify yourselves with the stars themselves. Before this you have a brain within you, but now the spiritual beings of Venus and Mercury, of the sun, enter into you. As you now are lungs, heart, kidneys, etc., so you are then a being who can say, quote, "In my inner being are the moon, Mercury, sun," and so on. In your inner being you are one with the universe. Do you imagine for a moment that the universe gives you the same understanding as your brain? The world looks very different then. If we look from the sun to the earth, the world has an aspect different from that which it has when we look back from the earth to the sun. So long as man remains in connection with the moon, Mercury, Venus, he goes through this backward experience. During this period, the connection with the outer stars, with Jupiter, Mars, and Saturn, is slight, and the connection with the fixed stars is very slight indeed. After a man has gone through his life and his actions, has passed through them backward to his birth, it comes to pass that he then judges these actions from the standpoint of the stars. His judgment is not retrospective, but forward. He says to himself, quote, "I must do such and such a thing in order to make up for such and such an action," close quote. This goes on for the first 20 to 30 years of man's life after death. It lasts a period that is a third of the length of his lifetime. With children, this period is very short. It hardly comes into consideration at all in very young children, as you will realize from what I have said. It is an actual fact that man lives through this life again, backward, in this way, because he has a spiritual and soul connection with his earth life. And when man gets back to his birth, he has then lived through everything. A memory of it all remains with him. It is then as if another body were laid aside. It is said that the astral body is laid aside. But what happens in reality is that the living action or activity in which man has been changes into a thought picture, although it is a different consciousness, a star consciousness that is thinking now, whereas an earth consciousness had been thinking previously. Then man sets out on his further path in the spiritual world. He lives with the beings whose physical reflections are sun, moon, and stars. He has to live with the spirits of the stars. He carries with him the memory of the karmic essence which he had previously laid aside with his astral body. Quote, "To lay aside," close quote, however, means nothing else than this, that within which man was formerly active is now a memory which he has as cosmic man. He enters into a purely spiritual world, bearing with him the memory of what his earth life bequeathed to him. So long as man is passing through this backward experience of his past earth life, he is really within the sphere of the planets. During the period of his progress through the forces of Moon, Venus, Mercury, Sun, Mars, Jupiter, to the Saturn forces, that is to say, so long as he is between the spheres of the Moon and of Saturn, he feels the planetary cosmos to be within him. And in this period he is passing through his backward experience of his past earth life. I told you a short time ago how the Moon and Saturn forces work against each other. The Moon contains those forces that bring men back again to the Earth and tend to hold him to the Earth. Saturn tends to lead him out into the world of the stars, but in such a way that when, between death and a new birth, man enters into this starry world, he does not see the physical reflections of the stars, but lives with the beings that belong to the different stars. Passing the sphere of Saturn after death, we are ripe for experience of the purely spiritual world. In my book, Theosophy, I have spoken of this change as the passage from the soul world to the spiritual world. Man cannot, through his own powers, make this transition, because memory connects him with his past earth life, as I have said. He needs a helper to pass into the spiritual world. I have spoken of this helper already. In the time before the mystery of Golgotha, the initiates of the mysteries were able to say to their pupils, quote, "When you have sent up your powers of sacrifice in the right way into the spiritual world, it is given to you to find the sublime Sun Spirit, who accompanies you from the time when you leave the Sun Sphere, but who accompanies you in his spiritual being in the other direction, inasmuch as the sun shines spiritually into the universe as it shines down physically onto the earth. This sublime Sun Spirit will accompany you, will bring you to the Saturn Sphere, and then farther out into the spheres of the stars. The spiritual sun will shine for you, so that you may be able to make the transit out of the soul world into the spiritual world." I believe that's close quote there. Through the mystery of Golgotha, it came about that this sun being descended to the earth, took on a body in the man Jesus of Nazareth, and man, by directing his heart and feeling to the Christ and the mystery of Golgotha, receives here on earth the power which enables him to pass out from the sun and Saturn spheres into the spiritual world, that is to say, to enter into the world of the stars. Then there comes the further state which man passes through between death and a new birth. Let me say the following in order to describe this condition through which, since the mystery of Golgotha, a man passes by means of the power of the Christ, which he has taken up into himself. In the first place, I must draw your attention to what is really implied when we say that when man is out in the world of the stars, in the spiritual world, he has the memory of his earth life. This will become clear to you in the following way. When man passes out of the Saturn sphere, he enters into what ancient world conceptions have called the zodiac. The zodiac is only the representative of the world of the fixed stars, or the spiritual world. But when man includes within himself the single stars which make up the zodiac, he finds the way through which he has to pass. He has to pass through this way in order to be able to cooperate with the spiritual beings of the hierarchies in the development of the spiritual germ of his next physical body from out of the cosmos. Now, suppose you were to say, quote, "Here on the earth we have interesting work to do. We can promote civilization. We can work for men. And what we do there must be very much the same, for we are only developing our own body," close quote. You would be quite wrong. For everything that you can accomplish on the earth is not to be compared with the greatness and variety of what you do when you are forming the human body, the temple of the gods, from out of the world of the stars. That is a labor of much more variety, much more sublimity. You not only form your body, you form it, as we shall see, in such a way that it belongs to the whole of humanity. Your karma has brought you into contact with certain men, and you form your new body in such a way that it has the tendency to come in contact with these men once again in order to balance and adjust your karma with them. In a far higher degree than is possible on the earth, you work for the whole of humanity. And how do you work? I will describe this to you in detail, but I remind you that I must express myself in sense images. I said last time that this has to be done when speaking of these lofty worlds, for human concepts are not constituted today in such a way that one can express oneself without imagery and pictures. Man is actually to develop the spiritual germ of his whole physical body. It is built up in detail from the universe. For example, when you are experiencing life with those spiritual beings whose physical reflection is the constellation of Aries, you are working together with the hierarchy of Aries at your head. At your head, which is to be an actual cosmos, which then draws together in the physical body. In your head, you bear within you the whole cosmos, viewed from Aries. Very well, then. You work with the hierarchy of Aries on the field of activity of Aries. The planets shine down onto the earth, and they shine spiritually in the other direction. Suppose you go on working. From the constellation of Aries, you reach the constellation of Taurus. From the constellation of Taurus, you work together with its hierarchies at the connection between your larynx and your lungs. Mars shines from the spheres of the planets to the sphere of Taurus. And hence, in the movement of Mars, there is expressed everything that you have rightly or wrongly performed through the instrument of speech. Every untruth that man has spoken is radiated by Mars into the sphere of Aries when man is working through the sphere of Aries. You can conceive, then, what this memory is that we have of our own deeds. After death, we find that this memory is inscribed into the universe as the Logos. We have, then, to work at our future body, and in reference to the instrument of speech, we have to work in such a way that we are helped or hindered according to whether we have spoken the truth or have lied. Again, when we pass through the constellation of Leo, all the imperfections that have proceeded from our more superficial or deeper heart life, our sympathies and antipathies that are associated with our temperament, with our blood circulation on the earth, radiate to us from the sun. The whole of our earlier life sounds out into universal space as a planetary speech. This is how we work at the building of our future body. However strange it may seem from an earthly standpoint, it is nevertheless true that when we view the planetary movement from out there in the universe, when we behold how Mars, let us say, carries out its movements in the direction of Taurus, the movement is a script that sounds at the same time. This is the starry script inscribed by our own deeds in universal space. It is no wonder that when we return again, we prepare what belongs to us by our karma, for we could not do otherwise than prepare our future physical body under the guidance of this stellar speech. Thus we work through the spiritual spheres, through that spiritual sphere where our sojourn is longer or shorter according to the measure of the relationship between the total earth life and the consciousness which we had as children, where life was still dim and hazy. For we are now in a consciousness that transcends our earth consciousness. In earth consciousness we are, as grown-up men and women, in a consciousness that transcends the dream consciousness of childhood. There are three stages or degrees of consciousness. If a man is 30 years old and, let us say, lived in a dream consciousness until the age of 5, he has lived 6 times longer in the higher consciousness. Now again, after death, he must live 6 times longer than the whole span of his life in the higher consciousness that he has in the world of the stars. It is easy to understand that when a child dies, it lives for an exceedingly short time between death and a new birth, and that the older a man is, the more he has to spend there, for the more his super-earthly consciousness that he had after the previous death is darkened here on the earth the longer must he work at the task of making it clear again, for we have to enter into the fullness of light. I'm going to read that again. It is easy to understand that when a child dies, it lives for an exceedingly short time, between death and a new birth. And that the older a man is, the more he has to spend there, for the more his super-earthly consciousness that he had after the previous death is darkened here on the earth, the longer must he work at the task of making it clear again, for we have to enter into the fullness of light. When we have entered into the fullness of light, there comes that time between death and a new birth, which I called in one of the mystery plays the midnight hour of the spiritual existence of man, the midnight hour between death and a new birth. This period of time that lies more or less in the middle point between death and a new birth is that in which the consciousness which permits of our living in the spiritual world among the beings of the higher hierarchies is the clearest. It is, moreover, during this period that we have the experience, quote, below in the sphere of the planets is everything you did as man, and that you must not abandon, for you cannot change it. You can only change it when you once again descend to the earth. Close quote. And then there arises the urge again to descend to the earth, to encounter the decision as between Saturn and the moon. Man follows in the wake of the dawning moon forces in order to approach the path back to the earth. This, in the case of a man who has grown up in his last life, is after centuries. The nearer we approach to the sphere of the planets and come into the spheres of Mercury, Venus, and Moon, the more that consciousness that we have had in common with the spiritual beings of the higher hierarchies vanishes. That is to say, we have a consciousness that now only contains the manifestations of these spiritual beings. Previously, we felt ourselves to be in and among these spiritual beings. When we were preparing the human head for the later earth life, we felt as if we were working together with the spiritual beings, whereas now they appear to us as pictures. In exchange, however, the effects of the moon forces arise within us. We again feel ourselves to be beings who ought to live an independent life. We are not yet, of course, in a physical body. But we have a presentiment of an independent life, of an existence alienated from the cosmos. We no longer behold the spiritual beings as they are, but we have their reflections. While we are experiencing these reflections, there sets in the gradual disappearance of what we built up as the spiritual germ of our organism, and we become aware that this spiritual germ of the physical organism has fallen away from us, has gone down to physical parents, and is living as the forces of the stream of generation on the physical earth. It is actually true that what we have prepared as physical body shrinks together and enters the stream of generation of a pair of physical parents, and we are left behind as a spiritual and soul being, feeling his connection to what has fallen below him in this way, but not being able to unite directly with it. The union can only take place when, in this condition, this spiritual soul being draws to itself the etheric forces which are in the cosmos, when it draws them into its etheric body. After the germ of our physical body has fallen away from us and is preparing our physical body in the body of the mother, we gather the forces for building our etheric body. Then we unite with this etheric body. But after the human germ has already existed for a time in the body of the mother, this is the process of the return to earth existence. And whereas we previously had before us only pictures of the spiritual beings, we now incorporate into ourselves what the moon forces alone can enable us to do, the memory of our karma. We incorporate this karmic being into ourselves in the form of actual forces. We take it up as well into the etheric body, incorporate it also into that. Hence we appear on the earth in such a way that we fulfill our destiny, our karma. While we are passing through the sphere of the moon forces, there arises within us the longing to work out our karma on the earth. This is the cycle passed through by man from death to birth. He ascends until he experiences an independent consciousness in the spiritual sphere, and then this grows dim once again, for he has the spiritual world only in pictures. While he has it only in pictures, will enters into him in regard to his karma, and he returns to the earth in order to work further in a physical body, until he is able, as the result of a series of earth lives, to reach the stage of another metamorphosis of existence. At the present period of the earth evolution, man, while descending out of the sphere of the stars, has the memory of his earlier earth existence, and has contact with this memory. He prepares his physical body in the sphere of the stars, and descending unites himself to this physical body of his. But we are standing in a very significant period of the earth existence. We only understand its full significance when we realize that we work at the preparation of our physical body in the sphere of the stars and clothe ourselves in it when we come down to earth again. But in our age at this point, something very essential is coming upon us, something of which I shall now speak. I have often said that in the last third of the 19th century, certain changes originating in the spiritual world have entered into the whole course of man's earth life. It is an actual fact that the doors of knowledge to the spiritual world are now, in a certain sense, open, and that when man makes the necessary efforts in his own being, he can penetrate into the spiritual world with knowledge. For many centuries, during which material knowledge was developing, this was not possible. The change in the spiritual world has come about because in the place of beings who were formerly the leaders, another being has come, a being who, because of the similarity of his qualities with those of the being called by tradition Michael, can also be called by the name of Michael. We can say, then, that the Michael being has taken over the spiritual guidance or leadership of mankind. The effect of Michael's influence in the soul and spiritual life of humanity on the earth is that in increasing measure man comes to realize that he is not only connected with the kingdom of the earth through his physical body, but that through his soul and spiritual nature he stands in a perpetual connection with the spiritual world. The growing into spiritual knowledge, then, is that which, on the one side, is connected with the sovereignty of Michael. The other side is that which comes to pass as the result of a real and genuine penetration of the human soul and heart with spiritual science. That means to say that as the light of this spiritual science is spread abroad, it will not remain a mere theory, but will stream into human feeling and exist as an ever-growing human love. What has been stored up in the last centuries is, so far as man is concerned, only a head knowledge that does not stream out into the whole being of man. It is really like a soul tumor, something that gradually hardens because the forces from the rest of the organism do not flow into it as they should. If in the head we become cleverer and the necessary feeling does not permeate this cleverness from the rest of the organism, then we become beings who really have something like a soul and spiritual cancer, a soul and spiritual cancerous tumor. The head cannot thrive spiritually if the rest of man does not stand in the world as a being of love, with his love permeated with will. what it is the wish of the Michael sovereignty to impart to humanity will be understood by men only when they themselves advance to meet it as a result of their own qualities. Man can only contact his Michael sovereignty when he is spiritually enlightened and is filled with the universal love of mankind, which proceeds from spiritual enlightenment. Then men will acquire a deeper and deeper understanding of what this Michael sovereignty means. The Old Testament peoples spoke of a Michael sovereignty as well, meaning that at that time Michael was the servant of Jehovah. That is to say, Michael then worked in the Jehovah forces. He was the servant of Jehovah. He fought against the Ahrimanic powers of which I spoke last time. In our age, Michael is destined more and more to become the servant of Christ. So that the saying, the Michael sovereignty enters into human history, means at the same time, the sovereignty of Christ must spread over the earth. Michael is the bearer of the light of spiritual knowledge. And then Christ comes as the bearer of the summons to universal human love. But as a result of this, something has changed, not only on the earth, but a great deal has changed in that life through which man passes between death and a new birth. From ancient times of the earth evolution of humanity, man has prepared his physical body as a spiritual germ in the way I have described, and then takes it over when he enters upon earth existence. But since the epoch of the Christ Michael sovereignty, man has come nearer and nearer to the position of being able to face another decision. At present, such men are few, but they should grow in number, for the light of spiritual knowledge is such that it illuminates our earth and the superphysical world as well. Man, then, as a result of the Christ Michael rulership, learns to face another decision when he has taken over his karma in his etheric body, and then approaches the path to his physical body. If spiritual knowledge spreads more and more over the earth, and man experiences this universal love of mankind in increasing measure within him, there will arise for future humanity, before their descent to earth life, the possibility that I shall now describe. Man will be able to say to himself, quote, I have prepared this body. I have sent this body down to the earth, and have in my etheric body taken into myself the karma that I have generated. And I see that as a result of what I did in earlier earth lives, such and such a man has been sorely injured. Close quote. We are always faced with the danger of injuring other men by what we do. The judgment of what we have done to other men is very clearly illuminated in this moment, when we are still within the etheric body and have not yet entered the physical body. Into that there will come in the future the light of Michael and the love of Christ. And we shall be put in the position of making a change by a decision to give the body that we have prepared to another, and ourselves to take over the body that has been prepared by him whom we have specially injured. This is the very significant change that will come about in the spiritual life of man from our time onward into the future. We shall be able to enter into a body that has had to be prepared by a man whom we have injured in some special way. And he will be able to enter into the body that we have prepared. And as a result of this, all that we can accomplish on the earth will be able to be karmically adjusted in quite another way than would otherwise have been the case. We shall be able as men to exchange our physical body. The earth could never attain her goal if the possibility of such a thing were not to come about. If this possibility were not to exist, humanity on the earth would never come to be a complete whole. and that must be. There must come for the earth evolution as a preparation for future planetary conditions of the earth, a time wherein it is quite impossible that the single being on the earth shall benefit by anything at the cost of the others. Just as the single leaf or the single petal feels itself to be a part of the whole plant and experiences pain and joy together with the whole plant, so figuratively speaking, a future must come to the earth in which the individual can have no happiness at the cost of the whole, a future in which the individual feels himself a part, a member of the whole. The spiritual equivalent for this consists in our learning to prepare our physical body for others. As men, then, we are leaving behind us an age wherein each individual has his physical bodies in a kind of series or sequence. We are entering upon an age brought about by the Michael sovereignty, in which, while we are working at the spiritual germs of our human body, we can prepare a body for others. And in the course of the earth incarnation, this will work itself out in such a way that, as a result of this mutual work in the spiritual world, we shall prepare a still more distant future, wherein men on the earth will be able to enter with their souls into those which they have injured or to which they have done harm, and take over the other soul into the body prepared by them. This may sound paradoxical, but it is nevertheless true. This will come about when the earth itself has passed over into another state. But the facts I have told you today, that come about as a result of the Michael sovereignty in the spiritual world, constitute the preparation for it. This will give you some indication of the nature of real magic. If here on the earth you allow the illumination of spiritual science to work upon you, you further the Michael sovereignty. You further and promote those forces which bring it about that men are able to live for each other in the grave, that they are able to face the decision as to the physical body which they will take over. Man will, in choosing his physical body, take into consideration what is best for humanity as a whole. By preparing this through human wisdom and human love, you are fulfilling something that is a reality in the spiritual world. That, my dear friends, is real magic. It is what was called in olden days true white magic, and humanity must enter into it. I wanted to direct your attention to the significance of the age which is imminent in the evolutionary course of humanity at this present moment. We ought not to be afraid and timid when it is a question of revealing facts about the spiritual world, for the future of humanity depends upon man's learning to live with the spiritual world just as here on earth he lives with the physical world. We can only help forward the future of humanity by becoming at home in the spiritual world as ancient humanity was at home in it, by rightly understanding the words of Christ, quote, "My kingdom is not of this world," close quote. Let us understand these words in their true meaning. Christ has descended to the earth. He has actually united himself to humanity. We might imagine that he would have said, "My kingdom is of this world," but he did not say this, because it was his wish gradually to make the earth into a kingdom not of the earth, but a kingdom gradually proceeding into a spiritual condition. His kingdom is not the same as it was up to the time of the mystery of Golgotha, and as it continued even afterward as a result of the prevailing inertia. His kingdom consists in this, that the Spirit shall rule here on earth. And this will come to pass when the Michael sovereignty is understood in the right way. And that will be when spiritual illumination and Christ-like human love are sought and striven for in the way I have indicated. And now, my dear friends, as I am going away, I should like to say one or two things to you which I hope you will take as a message for your particular branch of our society. I have spoken to you here 3 times, and I thank all my friends here for making this possible. I thank them with all my heart. But I also feel it my duty to draw your attention to the fact that there ought to be no misunderstanding about the anthroposophical movement. Our anthroposophical movement must not be a movement of mystical, hazy, nebulous theories sought out by man in order that he may become aloof from life. It must be a movement by means of which man brings the spiritual in a practical way into all spheres of life. It is, of course, a matter for great satisfaction that the educational movement has come into being here, and it is one of the streams which can carry anthroposophy into the world. Contact with the rest of the world can be gained by many such activities. But we must not forget one thing, that in all these movements which arise from out of the anthroposophical movement, we can attain nothing at all if we do not carry on energetically and vitally the impulse of anthroposophy per se. Our efforts must be directed to the impulse of anthroposophy, which aims to carry to the world anthroposophical teachings and forces so that the understanding of what is anthroposophical may be more and more widespread. And I have the impression that here we have good ground for the spread of anthroposophy per se, for the acceptance of anthroposophical thought. Let us suppose that through a miracle we were to succeed in founding a number of schools. What would be necessary for these schools? Anthroposophical teachings. Everything must be based on the foundation of anthroposophy. Before we can think of successful schools, we need active anthroposophists. There is good ground here for the spread of the anthroposophical impulse itself. That must be regarded as the principal thing. The thing of greatest importance is what brings spiritual life to the hearts of men. Again, we may think that eurythmia is making headway if it can be introduced into schools. I do not mean to say anything derogatory, but perhaps there may be this standpoint, quote, "Oh, yes, in schools there isn't so much fuss about it, and it won't be so conspicuous. If eurythmy gets known imperceptibly through the schools, that will be good," close quote. But it is better for us to give eurythmy out to all the world quite openly, for eurythmy comes directly out of anthroposophy. You will find good ground in this country for eurythmy if you will have initiative and carry to the world, as anthroposophy, the artistic elements in it, as well as what is of the nature of education. For this, it will, I think, be necessary for our friends here to cooperate still more consciously than before and carry anthroposophy to the world in a still more energetic way. Let me remind you, my dear friends, of something that I said first in Dornach, namely that the English-speaking peoples of the earth have, as a result of the role which has fallen to them since the terrible war, a very great responsibility, the responsibility of taking on themselves the primary task of spreading spiritual life. And this can actually be done through the understanding, the living understanding of the anthroposophical impulse. The society here today may be small, but let us have faith in magic, in true magic. Society could well grow to be large, just because there is in this country a great longing for spiritual life. Behind all the terrible decadence that is apparent, and which you will not deny, there is nonetheless the longing, quite unconscious in many people perhaps, for spiritual life. And if there is great enthusiasm and real life within the anthroposophical impulse, anthroposophy as such could well make much progress in this country. I have the impression, and I hope there will be no misunderstanding here, that there is a feeling that it is my wish that anthroposophy shall be somewhat left in the background and the other movements emphasized. But the other movements will spread only if a stronger impulse exists in anthroposophy. For this it is necessary that there shall be a still more vital cooperation among those friends who have so very kindly arranged our visit here. I wanted to say this to prevent any kind of misunderstanding. And now to turn to something that is really disagreeable, but which I feel it my duty to say. Without making any specific allusions, I just want to remind you of one thing. Friends, full of a spirit of sacrifice, have undertaken to create in Dornach a center for an anthroposophical movement. But as a result of it, I have had to take a great deal of responsibility on my shoulders, a responsibility associated with much anxiety. Dornach is there, and it is a very good thing, of course, that it is so, for the anthroposophical movement must have a center. But because it is there, we are faced with the possibility of not being able to go on with it. We are faced with the possibility of having to close Dornach because we have no money. You must forgive me for having to speak of matters so menaced by Ahriman, but they are a reality. Idealism is very precious, my dear friends, but idealism can express itself in a twofold way. Idealism may say, quote, "My face is turned to the ideal, and money is such a shabby, disgraceful thing that when I think of ideals, I really cannot think of my purse, too. That will not do at all. I simply won't think about money." Close quote. That is one side of the question. The other side of the matter is that just because one thinks of the highest ideals, one gets over this feeling, takes the disgraceful purse, and guarantees a basis for the ideal on the earth, because it is necessary. The point in this connection is always, my dear friends, one's purpose. However paradoxical it may sound, one can strengthen Ahriman or fight him with money. The point is the purpose and intention that one has. The only thing to do is to ask ourselves if it is a good or a bad thing to help Dornach. My opinion is that it is a good thing, but it is really a heavy care to me. I have always to remind our friends at such opportunities, I really do not like doing it at all, and I do it most unwillingly, that in the next few weeks we shall be faced with the possibility of having to close Dornach. In such an eventuality, the center of the anthroposophical movement would go, for Dornach has been there. You must all understand what it would mean for the anthroposophical movement if we had to close Dornach. It has been my duty to call attention to this, and I hope that if I have been understood aright, it may be possible for this anxiety to be lifted from me. It faces me very vividly and very fatally, this anxiety about Dornach in the immediate future. Forgive me for mentioning this in conclusion, but the sincere gratitude that I want to express to you for all that has happened to make these meetings possible is really no less. I would also like to say here that even if for a time we cannot be together, we can, if we hold on more firmly and gain more knowledge of spiritual things, be together in soul and spirit, even if we are separated in space. It is in this feeling and thought that I close the meetings which have taken place through your labors, and I hope that there may be others in the future. Let me just say that if anybody is in a position to let his heart be touched, I hope he will in future approach me personally. I have taken the responsibility on my own shoulders, and so I would ask you to come to me personally instead of going to anyone else, so that I may see how things are progressing and may also assume the full responsibility. The end of Lecture 6. You have been listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com, and this is the end of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner given in 1922, Man's Life on Earth and in the Spiritual Worlds.